Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
Sometime in the early morning hours of April 6, 1986, someone knocked on the door of a small home just off Route 66 in Gallup, New Mexico. A 9-year-old girl named Anthonette Calladito got out of bed. By the time the sun rose, she was gone. There have been many versions of what happened between the knock and when Anthonette's family realized she was missing, but what we do know is that there was no forced entry, no struggle, and nothing was taken, except for Anthonette. A 3-day search of Gallup and the land around it turned up nothing at all. The next 4 decades would bring sightings, changing stories, and even what many believe is a confession. But to this day, Anthonette Calladito remains missing. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Anthonette Calladito. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Now, this one is absolutely devastating for a lot of reasons, but what kills me is the fact that the 40th anniversary was just a few months before we're recording this, and there was nothing but crickets online.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I couldn't find anything from the Gallup Police Department or the FBI. And while there isn't much in the way of physical evidence in this case, which I mean is true of most of the cases we cover, there is a lot in the way of people who probably have information. Really seems as though headway could be made on this case if whatever cold case detective is assigned to it right now actually gets aggressive. Because, you know, listen, in any story that's 40 years old, a lot of the key players are no longer with us.
Right.
But some of them are.
Okay.
And I think there are a lot of people who know something. Before we get into it, we've had a few folks join us over on Patreon, so we'd like to take a moment and give them a shout out. Thank you to Mark and Shelley W. We really appreciate your support.
Thank you both so much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to get our episodes ad-free and sometimes early, you can join us over on Patreon at any level, starting at just $2 a month. You'll also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. Now, let's get into the story of Anthonette Calladito. Anthonette Christine Calladito was born on Christmas Day, December 25th, 1976, to Teresa Penny Calladito and Larry Estrada. Penny was Diné of the Navajo Nation. Her parents separated when Anthonette was just a baby, and Anthonette lived with Penny. Larry remarried, and Penny either remarried or was in a relationship with a man named Anthony Montoya. Penny and Anthony had 2 daughters, Sunita, who goes by Sadie, and Wendy. All 3 girls were about 2 years apart. After Penny and Anthony split, the sisters all lived with Penny in Gallup, New Mexico. In April 1986, Anthonette was 9, Sadie was 7, and Wendy was 5. Anthonette was a 4th grader at Lincoln Elementary School, and according to her father, Larry, quote, she was 9 going on 15, end quote. Anthonette helped her mother take care of her younger sisters, and her family described her as having a caregiver's heart. Anthonette would cook for her sisters and even iron their clothes.
Sounds similar to our 8-year-old, except he's cooking for his older brothers.
Yeah, but he's definitely not ironing clothes.
Well, we'd have to own an iron for that to actually work.
Yes, that is true. Anthonette was incredibly responsible, but she was still just a 9-year-old girl. Her family called her Squirrel, and her favorite color was purple. She liked Michael Jackson and, somewhat randomly, country music singer Ronnie Millsap.
I don't even know who that is.
I've heard of him, but I don't know either. That's why I was like, okay. Maybe. He's Michael Jackson in 1986? Yeah, obviously.
Well, maybe he was big in New Mexico at the time.
Yeah, maybe. Penny tried her best, but she was raising three little girls largely on her own, and according to her daughters, the household was chaotic. People came and went at all hours. There was drinking and more. Wendy told the Gallup Sun in 2016 that her mother was always going out and they had a lot of people coming over to the house. A neighbor later told police the same thing. It wasn't unusual for Penny to have visitors at all hours of the night. But Saturday, April 5th, 1986, wasn't a night where Penny was partying at the house and having people over. That night, she went out and the girls stayed home with the babysitter. Penny came back around midnight and sent the babysitter home, but she didn't send the kids straight to bed, at least not all of them. According to Penny, she and Antoinette stayed up playing cards until around 3 a.m.
With your 9-year-old?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, yes, that sounds a little odd. And so in a recent interview, Sadie was asked if that was something that Antoinette and Penny normally did. And Sadie said that, no, it wasn't.
All right. Suspicion already.
Penny would later tell police that the last time she saw her daughter was around 3 a.m. Basically, they finished their card game and went to bed. Now, the house that they lived in was a one-level, four-bedroom, two-bathroom house. But the girls usually slept in their mom's room. At about 7 a.m., just 4 hours later, Penny got up to take the girls to Bible school. And that's when she realized that Antoinette wasn't there. Penny says that she and the girls searched the house. When they couldn't find Antoinette, they began to go door to door around the neighborhood, but no luck. At around 11 a.m., Penny called the police.
4 hours later.
Yeah. So they searched the house and the neighborhood for about 4 hours.
Okay.
But it was 1986, so even though Antoinette was a child who ostensibly went missing from her bed, Penny was told that she'd have to wait an additional 4 hours, so a total of 8, before a missing persons report could be taken.
Where the hell did that number come from?
Right? It's so random. This is the first time in, you know, over 200 episodes that I've heard 8 hours.
8 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
For a child.
For a child.
Like, if it's an adult, give them a couple of days, they'll come back. If it's a child, you know, they're working their 9 to 5, they'll come back. Like, what the hell?
I don't know. When police did begin their investigation, they did the things that the family had already been doing. They went door to door and spoke with neighbors as well as those who were close to Antoinette. By that time, Penny had looked through Antoinette's room and discovered that nothing was missing, not even her shoes. It seemed as though Antoinette disappeared wearing only her pink nightgown. They also learned a new piece of information from Sadie. Someone had come to the door. According to Sadie, who was the 7-year-old.
Right.
Sometime after 3 a.m., they heard a man at their front door. They didn't answer the door, though, and they went back to sleep. Both Penny and Larry were adamant that Antoinette wouldn't have opened the door to a stranger, but they believed that there was a second knock. In an April 11th article in the Albuquerque Journal, Larry told the reporter that Sadie had told him that sometime after that first knock, there was another. She told her father that Antoinette got up to see who was at the door, but she stayed in bed and went back to sleep.
Okay.
Now, the reason her parents believed that Antoinette had opened the door was because the doors and windows had all been locked before the family went to bed, and there was no sign of forced entry or any struggle. In addition to the locked front door, there was a screen door that was also latched. So Antoinette would have had to open two separate doors in order to let someone in. So that immediately told everybody that Antoinette opened the door to somebody she knew.
But neither of the parents heard these knocks.
Well, so Larry didn't live there.
Okay.
So he wasn't there.
But Penny didn't hear it.
Apparently not.
Okay.
One of Penny's elderly neighbors said that she saw a brown pickup truck outside of Penny's home around 6:30 or 7 a.m. on the morning of Antoinette's disappearance. What's more, she says she saw a man get out of the truck and approach Penny's house, but she wasn't able to give a description of the man to police or get the license plate number.
Or the type of truck, make, model.
No, just nothing that was a brown pickup. Yeah, just a brown pickup. Both Larry and Penny said that they didn't know anyone who drove a brown truck. Antoinette went missing on a Sunday morning, but police didn't call in the state search and rescue team until Monday.
Because they're off on Sundays?
I guess.
Okay.
None of the searches performed by family, friends, or the police in those first few days turned up any clues as to Antoinette's whereabouts. As the first week of the investigation began to wind down, police said they were going to start backtracking and re-interviewing people in Antoinette's life. Interestingly, and this is another thing that I find to be completely confounding, it took investigators 4 days to do an actual search of Antoinette's house.
I thought you said that they started searching right away, or that was just the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So nobody went into the house initially?
I think they like maybe went in and did a looky-loo, like made sure that she wasn't hiding in a closet or something, but they didn't do like an official in-depth search for 4 days.
Well, that's a lot of time to get rid of evidence.
Yeah. And even if you're looking at it from a completely innocent point of view, a little girl was missing and Antoinette's family is from that area. They had a ton of family and friends. So, of course, what do? You go to the house. You see how the family's doing. People were coming in and out, you know, every single day at all hours.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yes, nefariously, evidence could be getting rid of, but evidence could also just be compromised or, you know.
Destroyed, taken out of the house.
Yeah, accidentally.
Accidentally, yes, yeah. Right.
Fingerprints. I mean, you know, that doesn't mean anything at that point.
Right.
Only a week in, Larry was beginning to lose faith. He told reporters that he was considering borrowing money to hire a private investigator, saying, quote, "I've got street people that aren't very friendly with the law. I figure I can get more information from the street right now. Maybe they can bring something to me. The word's out," end quote. Antoinette went missing 40 years ago. And even though I've searched newspaper archives to find the original articles, there's always a chance that there were articles that were written that, you know, just aren't there, right? So I can't definitively say that what I've been able to find is everything that was published back then. But what I can say is that after the April 11th article I was talking about, the next one I've been able to find is from June 22nd.
Oh, wow. Okay. So like really quick blurb in the news and then gone for
then
a while.
Gone, yeah. And then that headline, the June 22nd one, reads, "Fate of Missing Girl 9 Remains Mystery." That article is basically about how police were baffled. They responded to criticism that they didn't start the investigation early enough by saying that it wouldn't have mattered because there were simply no clues to be found.
Well, no clues to be found after 4 days, sure. Yeah. But, I mean, just on the news articles alone, what you're telling me, like, so you have a neighbor that saw the truck, right?
Yeah.
And a man approaching the house somewhere around 6:30 to 7, which is about the time, like, right before her mom wakes up.
Right.
So just on that alone, given that she saw the truck, she saw the man, she didn't hear, or at least she didn't report hearing, like, a scream or anything. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sign of forced entry. There's nobody else coming forward that they heard a child screaming at the wee hours of the morning. To me, it says right away, this is somebody that she knew.
Right. Yeah. Because they say, like, she's not going to open the door to a stranger. And so she had to not only open the door, but she opened the door, saw through the screen door who it was.
And then unlocked the screen door, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is somebody that she knows.
Absolutely. But who?
Well, I suppose if you were a police officer or an investigator back then, maybe you start poking around friends and family.
Right.
Digging a little deeper into Penny's life and who she knows and who she hangs out with.
Exactly.
They can't sit there and say they're stumped. They have no clues. They have an eyewitness saying there's a man approached the house with a brown truck.
Yeah,
at that time of day.
And every piece of evidence points to Antoinette opening the door to somebody she knew.
Right.
So police were looking into people who Penny hung around with and things like that. Now, in this article, they also said that they gave the family members polygraphs and that nobody was seeming to be deceptive. They even consulted kidnapping experts and hypnotized Penny, but couldn't uncover anything else. But one thing they did find out was the identity of the first man who was knocking on the doors and windows.
Okay.
His name was Ron Perry. Perry was a friend of Penny's. According to Sadie, they were best friends. He told detectives that around 3:30 a.m., he knocked on the Calladitos' front door and on a bedroom window because he'd argued with Penny at the bar earlier and wanted to check on her. Nobody answered, though, and he says he left and spent the rest of the night at a friend's house down the street, and the friend backed him up.
Mm-hmm. Does this person also own a brown pickup truck?
No, but we'll get more into the truck in a bit. Penny told reporters that she strongly believed that Antoinette was still alive, but that she thought her long brown hair had been cut. She said it was her mother's intuition.
Okay. It's random.
She also said that at that point she was barely leaving the house because there had been a number of awful rumors that had been going around town, including one that she had beaten Antoinette with a bat and buried her behind the shop and safe.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. This was apparently based on a rumor that police had found a child's body buried behind the grocery store, but no body had been found. So like, that was just completely made up. She said that the stress caused her to suffer from a nervous breakdown and put her in the hospital for 4 days. It wouldn't be until a year later that a huge clue would arrive and show that Penny's intuition about Antoinette may have been right. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. Every true crime story has money somewhere in the mix. The motive, the pressure, the moment that everything goes wrong. Financial stress pushes people to desperate decisions, and a lack of financial literacy is what makes people, especially kids and teens, easy targets. Greenlight is a debit card and app for families, but it's more than just a money tool. It's a safety net for teaching kids about money while also helping protect them before bad habits, bad actors, or real-world risks take hold. Give your kids the financial education and real-world protection most of us never got. We've been using Greenlight for our older two boys for years, and we love the way it works. We love to see where their money is going, being able to transfer money in quickly. It's just been so easy for us. Every day they're handling money without guidance is a missed opportunity. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/ATTWG. Don't wait to teach your kids real-world money skills. That's greenlight.com/ATTWG to get started. Greenlight.com/ATTWG. You know I love a good mystery, but not when it comes to what's going on with my body. Yet even when I go to the doctor, it seems like I still don't get the answers I'm looking for. Most people who get blood work done hit the same wall. The results come back, they get a nod, and everything looks fine, and they're sent on their way. Jevity is the first all-in-one precision health membership that closes that gap. Your membership includes access to a functional health expert and longevity clinician who review your blood work and build a personalized protocol. Jevity sent a phlebotomist to my house to take my blood, and they tested everything from cholesterol, blood pressure, to my cortisol levels and my thyroid. They even do a gut microbiome analysis. Jevity gives you a personalized plan, so 93% of members see meaningful improvement from their first to second round of blood work. And we have an exclusive offer for our listeners who want to try it for themselves. Go to gojevity.com/gone and use promo code ATTWG for 20% off your purchase. That's gojevity.com/gone and use promo code ATTWG for 20% off your purchase. I'm really excited to tell you, we've got another banger from Kensington Publishing and author Noelle W. Eiley, who wrote Ask for Andrea. Her new book, Gray After Dark, is incredible. It's a thriller that's inspired by a real crime, the 1984 abduction of Olympic biathlete Carrie Swenson, who was kidnapped and left stranded in the wilderness by her attackers. The story follows Miley, an injured Olympic hopeful who's spending the summer training in Idaho's remote Frank Church wilderness when she's abducted during a morning run. Suddenly, she's trapped in an off-grid cabin, miles from help, forced to rely on her athletic training, instincts, and sheer determination to stay alive. This book doesn't come out till June 30th, but I was so excited to get an early copy. And what I loved is it's not just a thriller about escaping a captor. It's also a battle against wilderness itself. Miley's stuck in the woods and realizing that surviving one more day is far from guaranteed. So if you're a fan of Freda McFadden, Karen Slaughter, John Mars, or true crime stories, Grey After Dark absolutely deserves a spot on your list. On the afternoon of April 12, 1987, a little over a year after Antoinette vanished, the phone rang at the Gallup Police Department. On the other end was a young girl who said that she was Antoinette Cayadito. The call was 40 seconds long, but police were unable to trace it. I'm going to play it for you now.
I'm Antoinette Cayadito.
Okay, whereabouts in Albuquerque? Hello? Antoinette, where are you? Antoinette?
Now, we know that police often receive prank calls in these cases, but that one felt very real.
No, that was terrifying.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it sounded like somebody had come up and grabbed her off of the phone.
Yeah, it did.
And then you just hear screaming and then it cuts out. Like, that's horrible.
Yeah. Even Penny was convinced that it was her daughter, saying, quote, "It was her voice. I would know my baby's voice anywhere," end quote. And she also said later on Unsolved Mysteries that, like, the way she said her last name was, like, exactly the same way Antoinette would say it, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she definitely thought it was her daughter. Even before this call came in, though, because remember, this is almost exactly a year later.
Yeah.
Sightings of Antoinette were rolling in. Just 2 days after she vanished, a man in San Antonio, Texas, thought that he'd seen a girl in a long pink dress standing on the side of the road with a blonde woman. Later that April, a woman near a Thriftway gas station said that a brown truck went past her and she was sure she heard a small voice screaming for help. That June, a man at a bus depot in El Paso, Texas, reported seeing a girl in a pink dress with two men. He also said that she had a mark on her cheek, and Antoinette did have a mole on her right cheek. In November 1989, a man in Missouri told police he'd seen her at a truck stop off of I-70. He said that she was alone, in torn jeans and a dirty white t-shirt. He said that she seemed frightened of people. He said that she looked like she had been punished for something. None of these sightings were confirmed, of course, but they all followed basically the same pattern. A girl on the road, a girl with strangers, a girl who's trying to get someone's attention. Which brings us to Carson City. In 1991, a waitress at a restaurant in Carson City, Nevada, served a table with an unkempt-looking couple and a girl in her early teens. The girl kept knocking her utensils onto the floor. Every time the waitress bent down, picked them up, and handed them back, the girl grabbed her hand and squeezed it, over and over. The three of them left, and the waitress went to clear the table. And under the girl's plate, she found a napkin. The napkin said, "Help me, call police."
Jesus.
By 1991, Antoinette would have been 14. We obviously have no idea if that was her or not, but if it was, that was 5 years after her disappearance. And that means she wasn't kidnapped by a killer. She was kidnapped for other reasons. So Penny had said from the beginning that she thought Antoinette was alive, and there were multiple alleged sightings of her for years. Police would run down tips as they came in, but nothing really led anywhere. As the years went on, they would periodically take a fresh look at the case, and that 911 call prompted one of those looks. In an interview right around that time, Gallup Police Detective Aesop Hinshaw told the Albuquerque Journal that his, quote, "gut feeling is that some family members may not be telling us all they know," end quote. He said that throughout the investigation, they would find out information that the family would then confirm, but that it was information the family could have provided them in the first place. One such piece of information was about a grown man who had taken a special interest in Antoinette. a man named Emiliano Gardella. Emiliano, who was nicknamed Emo, was another friend of Penny's. He had also given flowers to Antoinette 3 times in the days leading up to her disappearance.
Gross.
Now, this is something that Penny was fully aware of, that he gave Antoinette flowers, but only told police about after another family member mentioned it during one of the searches.
Why? Why didn't she tell the police?
That's a good question.
Did she think this guy was innocent in giving her 9-year-old daughter flowers?
Maybe. I don't know.
Look, I get it. Like, at the time, previous to Antoinette going missing, it's like, oh, you know, you're being sweet to my daughter or whatever.
No.
I mean, no. Like, maybe.
I mean, maybe. Yes, right? He also apparently gave her a necklace.
Yeah, that's a little much.
Yeah, Sadie said that years later, that he had also given Antoinette, like, a silver necklace, and it was a bear, and the tummy of the bear was, like, a turquoise, turquoise.
Okay.
Yeah. Antoinette wasn't wearing that, and Penny later put up a shrine to Antoinette and put that necklace, like, on the shrine.
Well, again, maybe in the moment, for the sake of argument.
Yeah.
Take Penny's side, thinking, like, this guy's just trying to ingratiate himself to me through my daughter, you know?
Right.
And, like, she doesn't really think that much about it. But then when she goes missing,
why not mention
that? Why not mention that to the police? Like, then the red flags in hindsight really should have gone up.
Right. Because, and I don't know what family member is the one who ended up mentioning it, but they thought it was important.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know? The next piece of bombshell information came about 5 years after Antoinette's disappearance, right after that possible Carson City sighting. So that was, like, another thing that triggered detectives to kind of go back and start talking to people again. So they decided to re-interview Wendy, Antoinette's youngest sister, who was only 5 at the time. During this interview, which took place at Wendy's school, she told a different story than the one that had been told 5 years prior. In this version, she talks about the second knock, and she says that when the second knock happened, Antoinette went up to answer the door, and Wendy followed her.
Okay.
She says that Antoinette asked who it was, and the person at the door said it was Uncle Joe. It was at that point that the little girl who had been taught never to open the door to anyone unless you knew them opened the door. According to Wendy, 2 men were there. They grabbed Antoinette, and one of them put his hand over her mouth as they picked her up and carried her to a brown van.
Okay.
Detectives asked Wendy if she could describe the men, but she said that she didn't see their faces. They also asked why she had never said anything before, and she told them that her mom was just crying all the time and she was afraid she would get in trouble. I mean, she was 5.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Detective Corporal Marty Esquivel told this story in Unsolved Mysteries. He said that his belief is that Wendy was afraid that people would think she was making the story up, but that he believes she was telling the truth when they re-interviewed her.
And how old was she when they re-interviewed
her? Like 10.
Okay. So the discrepancy of a van versus a truck, I mean, you know, it could have easily been a brown pickup truck with a cap.
Oh, yeah. That yeah, for
a 5-year-old would see it and think it was a van.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Now, the girls did have an Uncle Joe. He was married to Penny's sister. So it makes sense that Antoinette would open the door to somebody who's outside saying it's Uncle Joe.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, after Wendy tells him this, police went straight to him. But Uncle Joe provided both an alibi and a corroborating witness to that alibi. So police ultimately did clear him. Now, they didn't get into, I think it has to have been a pretty good alibi.
I hope it's not just his wife.
No, I think there's more to it than that. And as we get into it, like, I, because that was my thing. When I was watching Unsolved Mysteries, I was like,
yeah,
come on.
Like, okay, so
it's Uncle Joe.
Yeah, right. Like, so my initial thing is, okay, well, is, you know, Wendy's sister blonde?
What?
Is Wendy's sister blonde? There were sightings of.
Oh.
Of her with a blonde woman.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they were both natives, so I would assume
not
but
you never know.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, so I do think that's interesting. But what police came to believe is that whoever knocked on the door and said he was Uncle Joe wasn't Uncle Joe, but he knew the family exactly. well enough to know that there was an Uncle Joe.
Right. So how close was Emo to this family?
Yeah, and that's a good question. And the answer is really not very close. And we'll talk more about Emo because, yes, he definitely does come back in this story. But no, like Emo was kind of a new person in their lives. He hadn't been around very long at all. But, you know, again, that doesn't mean he couldn't have met Uncle Joe. That doesn't mean he couldn't have heard of Uncle Joe. Like,
right.
He was bringing Antoinette flowers. I mean, clearly,
There's some familiarity.
Exactly.
Right.
So, okay. Getting back to, like, you know, what police thought, right? That the person who came to the door knew about Uncle Joe, and that was their plan. They set a trap to get Antoinette to answer the door. So, like, that makes sense. You know, they set a trap, and it worked. But how did they know that she would be the one to open the door? What would make them think that a 9-year-old would get up at 3:30 in the morning and answer the door for anyone, regardless of whether or not she knew them? Wouldn't the more likely scenario be that Penny would get up and answer the door? So what was the plan then? Would they just kidnap Penny? Were they just going to kidnap whoever answered the door? Were they going to tie Penny up and get Antoinette? Were they going to try to kidnap everybody? Like, what was the plan?
I don't know.
The answer to those questions may have come in the form of a confession to the FBI in 1994. Does anyone else feel like August is the Sunday of summer? It's the perfect time to hit reset before the autumn rush, and for me, that always starts with my wardrobe. Quince proves that you don't need a crowded closet to look incredible. You just need the right pieces, and I just bought a couple of great ones from Quince. I got this beautiful ribbed elbow-length shirt that will transition from summer to fall, and even though it's basically a short-sleeve t-shirt, it looks super elevated. And it certainly helps that everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And I love that they work directly with ethical factories and they cut out the middleman. So you're paying for quality, not brand markup. So upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/ATTWG. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK, too. That's quince.com/ATTWG. It's been a busy summer, and I don't know about you, but my routine has definitely taken a hit these past couple months. Now that I'm actually home for more than a few days, I'm ready to start eating real food and, you know, looking at a vegetable again. That's why I'm so happy that my Factor box just got delivered today. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes and require no prep and no cleanup. So even on the days when your schedule is completely out of control, eating well is still achievable. Every week, you'll find over 100 nutrient-dense menu items to choose from, and they fit a variety of dietary needs. Right before recording this, I literally just finished my favorite meal from Factor, which is their miso edamame tofu salad. It was absolutely amazing. I actually got two of them in my box this week. So let's eat real. Head to factormeals.com/ATTWG50off and use code ATTWG50off to get 50% off and one free breakfast item per box for 1 year while supplies last until 10/31/2026. That's code ATTWG50off at factormeals.com. ATTWG50off at factormeals.com. See website for more details. Look, everybody's talking about GLP-1 weight loss medication right now, but what most people don't know is that getting started is so much easier than you may think. Most people assume it's hard to access or out of reach, but BreezeMed changes that. It's medically supervised weight loss that's completely online. No clinics, no referrals, no waiting rooms, just a licensed provider who handles everything.
It's efficient. You fill out a form in under 5 minutes, and if you qualify, medication is shipped directly to your door.
And these are licensed providers, it's medically supervised, and there are no hidden fees, especially with 20% off your first order. And with Breeze Meds, you can get started for $199 a month and it ships to your door for free. No subscriptions, no lock-ins, and no hidden charges. Get 20% off your first order with code ATTWG at BreezeMeds.com. That's 20% off your first order, code ATTWG at BreezeMeds.com. On March 1st, 1994, Sadie and her mother, Penny, went to the FBI office. Sadie waited outside while Penny went in. Crystal Gutierrez is a former reporter who has a show on YouTube called Beyond the Case. She has been extensively investigating Antoinette's case for the past several years, and she was somehow able to get her hands on a copy of that 1994 interview.
Well, somebody from the FBI is in trouble.
Because I can't understand a world in which you could have gotten that from a FOIA request.
No, they would never release something
right?
like that.
No. Like, I have no idea how she got her hands on that. But very happy that she did, because that interview is shocking. Sadie had never seen it, of course. And so Crystal gave her a copy to read of the transcript.
Yeah.
She also published portions of it in the YouTube episode that she did on this, but, you know, kept a lot, like most of it back, you know, because even though she did have it, she still didn't really want to screw up the investigation.
Sure, yeah.
So early in the 1994 FBI interview, Penny asked a question that changed everything. Quote, "What if me and Emo did this? Would we both go to prison?" End quote. Emo, the man who had brought flowers to a 9-year-old girl, a man who was friends with her really good friend, Ron Perry, the man who admitted being the first person who knocked on the door that night. So that is how Emo even came into this. He was friends with Ron. In fact, Ron said that at the time he had his own junkyard. And he had hired Emo to basically just help him out, like load stuff up onto his truck and things like that. They became friends. They would party, and Ron and Penny were really close. So that's why Emo started coming around, too. Ron also said later that Emo would drive him around a lot because Ron was a big drinker, and I guess maybe Emo wasn't. So Emo would just kind of chauffeur him around.
And he also would admitted to having an argument with Penny earlier that night.
Yep. Here's a section directly from the FBI report. Quote, "Cayadito advised that Emo Gardella and Ron Perry had come over." Then there's a redacted part. It continues, quote, "She remarked to Emo that her oldest daughter was getting to be a problem and she wanted a better life for her." End quote.
Wait, Penny is actually saying this in the interview?
Yes.
Holy shit.
It goes on to say, quote, "Cayadito advised that Emo Gardella then told her that he would be the person that would take Antoinette. Cayadito stated she wanted to know where, redacted, told her it was better that she did not know," end quote. Penny then said that Emo came over the night before the abduction and gave Antoinette 2 roses. She then told them a new story about what happened in the early morning hours of April 6, 1986. Penny said that she heard the second knock. Quote, "I told her to go ahead and answer it. I laid there for a period of time, maybe 30 minutes, and Antoinette never came back. I got up to see where she was, but I couldn't find her," end quote. She put the knock somewhere between 3:30 and 4:30 a.m. She said it was just getting late when she got up. Sunrise in Albuquerque was at 5:55 a.m. that day, though, so either the knock happened later or she laid in bed for more than 30 minutes. Penny said that after the dawn broke, she began to have second thoughts about what she had done. She finished the interview with the FBI and said that she still had no idea what happened to Antoinette after that night, and that she hopes she's alive. Then she left the office, met Sadie outside, and drove away.
Why did they let her go? She just admitted to conspiracy to commit a crime.
I have no idea.
What the actual fuck? Like, she admitted to playing a part in her child's kidnapping, And they just said, all right, thanks for the info.
Yeah.
Bye. Enjoy your time with your other kids. Hope you don't do that again. What the flying fuck?
I don't know. I mean, I don't understand any of it. So not only was she allowed to leave, and Sadie later said that, you know, Penny just said that they were asking for, like, more information, you know, just it was a general normal interview. Yeah, not only was nobody arrested, but neither Penny, Emo, nor Ron have ever been publicly named as suspects or even persons of interest in Antoinette's disappearance. The FBI allegedly didn't even share this confession with the Gallup Police Department.
Oh my God, this is making my head hurt.
Crystal Gutierrez interviewed one of the detectives who worked on Antoinette's case in the 2000s, and he said he had no idea that confession existed.
Jesus Christ.
He read it and he was like, if I had been given this information, I would have started making arrests.
Yeah.
He didn't know.
What the fuck was the FBI doing?
I have no idea. I just don't understand. When Sadie learned all of this from Crystal Gutierrez a couple of years ago, she said that Ron was the reason Emo was around, like I said. She also said that after Antoinette's disappearance, Ron stopped coming around the house. She says she doesn't think she ever saw him again. Even as a kid, she had thought that was weird because he and her mom had been so close. In 2025, Crystal Gutierrez tracked Ron down. He was an inmate at a New Mexico state prison, and he agreed to an interview. In it, he said that he never had a conversation with Penny about abducting her daughter. He also said that he had been with Emo when he bought those flowers, but that Emo had told them they were for Penny, not Antoinette. Sadie recorded a video with questions that she had for Ron. One of them is, why did he stop coming around? He never answered that directly, but he did say why he stopped hanging out with Emo, and it was because Emo moved out of the area several months after Antoinette's disappearance, and they just kind of lost touch.
Yeah, probably with Antoinette.
He also said that he had no idea whether or not Emo was involved in this case and that he had only brought him around Penny's house once or twice. Ron also said that he had no knowledge of any drug use on Penny's part, saying that they only drank together. He also had never seen any drug sales or any other related activity happening at Penny's house. And this is just based on questions that Sadie had asked. But according to Sadie, there had been a drug raid at their home just a few months prior to Antoinette's disappearance. She also said that a retired Gallup police detective once told her that he believed that drug raid is related to her sister's disappearance. Sadie has also said that she has heard that Emo was the one who was supplying the drugs. So her big question for years has been, did her mother trade or sell Antoinette for drugs or to pay a drug debt?
Probably. I mean, that would be the only motivation I could think of.
Right.
Because, I mean, whatever bullshit she said, like, she was becoming a problem and wanted her to have a better life. Like, what the fuck does that mean?
Right.
You sell her off to, like, some fucking sleazebag? That's not going to give her a better life.
Yeah.
No, it was 100% because she either owed money or wanted more drugs.
Yeah, and I couldn't fit this into the episode, but in one of the episodes that Crystal Gutierrez did about this, she spoke with another mother who knew Emo around that time and said that he had been creepy with her child as well. And she had like a little girl, I'm not sure how old, but the second time that Emo met her daughter, he bought her a mink coat. And the mom was like, yeah, I told him to get the fuck away from my kid and like never come around us again. So Emo allegedly, you know, had a history of basically trying to groom little girls. Now, what I will say is I did find him online and I didn't see any criminal charges related to anything like that.
What was Ron in jail for during the interview?
I'm not sure, but nothing related to this. Now, after her interview with Ron, which took place in September 2025, so pretty recently, Crystal Gutierrez showed the entire thing to Sadie. So apparently they spoke for like 45 minutes. Sadie's takeaway after watching it is that she doesn't believe Ron told her everything he knows. During the interview, he said that he wasn't just good friends with Penny as Sadie had thought for her entire life. They were actually romantically involved. But Sadie didn't believe for a second that Ron found out that Antoinette was missing from the FBI, as he says in the interview. Their family was out searching for Antoinette on day one. She says that everyone in their town knew that she was missing, and Ron was always around. He had to have known. Now, she doesn't know if he was there for, like, all of the conversations about the plan or if he physically had anything to do with her sister's kidnapping, but she doesn't think that he's come completely clean either.
For sure.
And there is a really interesting part of the interview where Crystal asks him, like, do you think that Emo had anything to do with Antoinette's disappearance? And he said something to the effect of, not to my knowledge.
Okay.
But then she asked him, do you know of anyone else who had anything to do with Antoinette's disappearance? And he said, no, I don't. And then she said, did you have anything to do with it? And he said, no, I didn't. So he said very clear no's, but when it came to Emo, he said, not to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
After interviewing Ron, Gutierrez tracked down a woman named Vonica. Vonica was Ron's common-law wife back in 1986.
Was she blonde?
No, she's a black woman.
Okay.
At the time of her disappearance, she was also pregnant. Her child was born 3 days after Antoinette went missing. She talked about what she remembered from that time. According to Vonica, police came to her house the day after Antoinette's disappearance and asked her where Ron had been the night before. She said that he had left with a guy named Emo. According to her recollections, Emo brought Ron home around 4 a.m. on the morning of Antoinette's disappearance, which is interesting because according to the news article from a week after Antoinette's disappearance, Ron told police that he had stayed with a friend. So I don't know if that meant Vonica, because it sounded like they lived together.
Right.
And that was his house. I don't know. She said that Ron was drunk, like shit-faced drunk, basically. And she was sleeping, but he couldn't like get his key to work in the door. So that woke her up because he was like fumbling around trying to get in. So she got up, let him in, and basically Emo came in, dumped Ron on the couch, and Ron immediately passed out.
Okay.
Emo had driven her blue truck there. Because she and Ron shared that car. And like I said earlier, Ron said that Emo kind of chauffeured him around a lot.
Yeah.
So Emo had driven Ron home in his truck, in their truck, and left the truck there. She says she has no idea where Emo went after that or how he got there, you know, if he had somebody pick him up, if like what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But she said that at the time, their house was only a few streets over from Penny's. Vonica said that the police continued to come back. And at one point, they took Ron down to the station for questioning, which, you know, we kind of knew.
Yeah.
She says that she remembers him being gone for hours. After that, the police came back and asked her if they could search the truck. And they shared it, but it sounds like it was in her name. So she consented to the search because she's like, I didn't have anything to hide.
Sure.
Now, like I said, it was a blue truck, not a brown truck. But she said that police told her that somebody had seen that truck at Penny's house. Now, she didn't know a lot of details or anything. She said that they had like looked for fingerprints and things like that. But it doesn't seem that police found anything in the truck. And to our knowledge, no physical trace of Antoinette has ever been found anywhere.
You said that Emo brought Ron home at 4 a.m.
That's what she remembered. I think she might have at one point, she said like 4. At one point, she said, you know, 4 or 5. So I think her recollection isn't super tight, you know?
Sure, but that would fit around... That would fit the timeline if Emo did, in fact, dump Ron on the couch and then go back out and get Antoinette.
No, it absolutely would. And, you know, it would fit with Ron's original story that, you know, maybe he was drunk after the bar. He and Penny had gotten into some sort of argument and he's like, well, let me go talk to her. you know, started knocking on the door, knocking on the window, and then they didn't answer. So Emo took him, dumped him back home.
But then Emo came back with somebody else.
Apparently, because so it was only Wendy's statement that said that there were two people.
Yeah.
The neighbor said she only saw one person.
Sure.
We don't have any other witnesses.
Yeah, I mean, but the neighbor's recollection of one versus two, I mean, she could have only just seen one person get out of the driver's side and not notice the other person.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But if Monica is to be believed, it doesn't sound like Ron would have been involved in the physical aspect of the kidnapping.
No, but maybe he knew, and maybe that's what the fucking argument was about at the bar.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe she was at the bar with Ron and Emo talking about it, and Emo took her up on it. Ron does know more than he's letting on.
That's what it sounds like. And, you know, Monica says that she believes that if he knew more, he would say something. You know, they're divorced now. Like, they're not together or anything like that. But, you know, they did have kids together. At one point during the interview, Ron said he had like 19 grandchildren and 6 kids and had a huge family. So it sounds like they, you know, stayed close to a degree. But, I don't know. I mean, he was also, according to him, sleeping with Penny while Vonica was 9 months pregnant.
Right.
So, you know.
I'm still blown away by the whole FBI thing. Like,
I don't understand it.
Whatever happened with that. So that detective, you know, got that information.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to know what he did with it. Like, did he go contact the FBI and like, what the fuck?
I don't know. Well, I mean, at the time, he was retired. He basically also agreed to be interviewed by Crystal Gutierrez.
Yeah.
She showed him this because he had worked on Antoinette's case. But yeah, he was already retired at that time. And
I mean, I hope he made some fucking phone calls.
I don't know.
Put that into the cold case detective that had the case.
Yeah, and what's crazy is like I haven't seen any mainstream news pick this up except for like the news station. So Crystal Gutierrez, I think, was an anchor. And now she's like independent, but I think she still does have a relationship with a news station in New Mexico. So they've talked about this and they like aired portions of her Beyond the Case series. I was able to see that on their website. But other than that, like I haven't seen mainstream media like pick this up at all.
That's nuts.
The confession and Penny's new story has made it onto Antoinette's Wikipedia page with KOB4, that news station that Crystal Gutierrez works with, as the source of that, right? So, like, she's really the only one who's been actually reporting on this.
Who? What the hell? Like, that's insane.
Yeah, in 2010, Marty Esquibel, the detective who was on the episode of Unsolved Mysteries, spoke to the Gallup Sun, I believe it was, and mentioned that Penny had failed a polygraph given by the FBI, which I believe was from that same day, the 1994 interview, but like didn't say anything about, oh yeah, and she also just said she was involved.
No, I mean, it definitely seems like the FBI just didn't tell them that, didn't release the interview to them.
Yeah.
But why?
But why?
I mean, why are they protecting Emo and Ron?
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing I can think of is that Emo is some sort of informant or something. And they kept that hush hush to keep him out of jail.
Maybe. Because, yeah, it doesn't seem as though he's really been in jail. I saw some kind of minor things on his record, but most of it was like, you know, he didn't have the right license for driving a truck or, you know, something like that. I mean, it's absolutely insane to me that you had this big investigation where the FBI got involved. Then 8 years later, the mom comes in and was like, hey, yeah, actually, I did it.
Right.
And then just nothing happened.
And then they're just like, oh, well,
crazy.
We can't believe her.
And that's why I just think it's so bizarre that even after Crystal Gutierrez has uncovered this because she's been doing this for years. So like the most recent episode where she interviewed Ron just came out a few months ago, but a lot of this came out a few years ago.
Right.
And nothing.
Nothing is
crickets.
Happening.
Crickets. It was the 48th anniversary and crickets.
What the hell?
You know, like if you look, yeah, there's been some stuff on like Reddit or whatever, but nothing official. I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't know either. Like I'm dumbfounded.
According to both Sadie and Wendy, Penny basically fell apart after Antoinette's disappearance.
Out of guilt because she was involved?
I mean, that's what it seems like, right? I think it's a combination of guilt and grief. In articles from the first few years, she speaks about how she had trouble sleeping and would just clean her house in the middle of the night. Sadie says that she eventually went to live with her father because Penny just couldn't cope. But Wendy stayed with Penny. The two younger girls then seemed to go down very different paths. In an interview with the Albuquerque Journal in 2016, Wendy spoke about dark times she had with Penny. She says that she and her mother couldn't talk about Antoinette without crying, and they would drink and get high to deal with the pain. Quote, "That was how we coped with the pain, to numb it, not to forget about it, but to put it on the shelf, you know?" End quote. The pair went on like that, and Wendy eventually fell deep into drugs and alcohol and even got involved with gangs. She had children and lost custody of them. She was in and out of jail, and she became estranged from Sadie. But by 2016, the 30th anniversary of her sister's disappearance, she says that she had gone to rehab and gotten clean. Quote, "I struggled to get my kids back, struggled to get away from the old person I was, to break the cycle I was raised up in, and to get away from here. And I did it," end quote. She now lives in California. But the same couldn't be said for Penny. On April 18th, 1999, 13 years after her oldest daughter disappeared, Penny Cayadito died of cirrhosis and cardiac complications. She was 46. Whatever Penny knew, she took with her. Antoinette's father, Larry Estrada, was a big part of the search for her. In a later article, Penny said that he would stop by her house and check in on her. In later years, he disappeared from the news coverage, and there are a lot of sources that list Wendy and Sadie's father as Antoinette's father, either erasing Larry completely or referring to him as her stepfather. Now, Larry did show up in a few news stories in 1989, but not necessarily because of Antoinette. That year, his 25-year-old mentally disabled sister, Luisa Estrada, disappeared after going on an evening walk. This is mentioned in some write-ups of Antoinette's case, and police did look into whether or not there could be a connection because, you know,
well, yeah,
two people, and because this was also in Gallup. Like, so Larry grew up in Gallup, New Mexico as well. Like, his whole family's there. So, yeah, this happened 3 years after Antoinette's disappearance to another member of Larry Estrada's family. But it doesn't appear that they ever found a connection. A lot of sources say that, like Antoinette, Luisa was never found, but that's not true. Luisa was found in Juarez, Mexico, about a month after her disappearance. The story is kind of wild. So she was abducted on an evening walk. The person who grabbed her bound her hands and her feet and told her, quote, not to tell her daddy, end quote. She was then driven over the border to Mexico. She was found after her father, Modesto Estrada, went to Mexico himself and told authorities there to look for her. She was found an hour and a half later, wandering the streets. She was dirty, disheveled, and had an infected cut on her leg. Modesto had been tipped off by a family friend who had seen Luisa in Juarez, but didn't realize at the time that she was missing.
What the hell? That is so wild.
Yeah. Modesto told the Albuquerque Journal, quote, "They did in an hour and a half what the Gallup police couldn't do in a month," end quote.
Yikes.
They also did what the Gallup police or the FBI couldn't manage to do in 40 years. Larry Estrada died in 2012. Now, he was already remarried at the time of Antoinette's disappearance and went on to have several other children. There is no mention of Antoinette in his obituary. Today, as far as I can tell, Emo is currently living in Phoenix, Arizona. He's 73 years old. As of September 2025, Ron Perry was in prison on unrelated charges. As of this recording in July 2026, no one has been arrested or even named a suspect in Antoinette Cayetano's disappearance. The case is allegedly still open. It's worked jointly by the FBI, the Gallup Police Department, and the Navajo Nation Division of Public Safety. On the 34th and 35th anniversaries, the Bureau issued renewed public appeals, and they released the poster and an audio recording in Navajo as well as in English. Dateline reported in 2017 that Antoinette's file lives in a box at the Gallup Police Department and that tips had slowed to almost nothing, but that every new detective who joins gets a fresh look at it. And as I said earlier, I couldn't find anything from any of these agencies that marked the 40th anniversary of Antoinette's disappearance. On the 30th anniversary, Wendy spoke with the Gallup Sun and told them, quote, "I'm not going to accept that she's dead. I need proof," end quote. And I don't blame her.
Yeah, I mean, there's a fucking confession, like a clear path of where the investigation needs to go. Needs, as in current.
Yeah.
Emo is still alive. Ron is still alive. Why are they not being investigated?
I don't know. I mean, thank God for Crystal Gutierrez. And we'll link to her channel in the show notes. So please, like, go to her YouTube channel. She has, I think it's 4 episodes of Beyond the Case over a period of years dedicated to Antoinette. And each episode's like 45 minutes long. So there's a lot in this. I gave you the highlights, but like, I highly recommend that you go watch that yourself. But yeah, as far as I can tell, she's the only one who's been doing a damn thing in recent years. And we wouldn't know half of what we know if it wasn't for her. You know, we don't know if all or any of the alleged sightings of Antoinette were real, but this is one of those cases where I truly believe that she could still be out there somewhere. Maybe she knows who she is and has decided to let her past stay buried, or maybe she's forgotten that part of her. Either way, there are people out there who know what happened in the early morning hours of April 6, 1986. Whether it was Emo or Ron or neither of them somehow, the information we have says to me that there were many people involved, if not that night, later. And yes, it's been 4 decades, but it's never too late to do the right thing. Antoinette Cayetano has been missing from Gallup, New Mexico since April 6, 1986. She is a biracial female of Navajo and Italian descent, with brown hair and brown eyes. She has dark-colored moles on her right cheek, her nose, her back, both hands, and her right ankle, and scars on her knee and on her lip. Her ears are pierced, and at the time of her disappearance, she wore eyeglasses. At the time of her disappearance, she was approximately 4 feet 7 inches and 55 pounds. She was last seen wearing a knee-length pink nightgown and possibly a silver chain with a small turquoise cross pendant. Antoinette was 9 years old when she went missing. She would be 49 today. If you have any information about the disappearance of Antoinette Cayetano, please contact the Gallup Police Department at 505-863-9365 or the FBI's Albuquerque Division at 505-889-1300. You can also submit a tip online at tips.fbi.gov. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!